Well, we're back here on 102.9 FM in Stouffville, whistlefm.ca. Go online, folks, and listen to us wherever you are. That's the key to radio in the future, I believe. It's using your phone to do one more thing, in a sense, but a very useful thing. You can live stream these shows from wherever you are on this planet. So 102.9 FM here in Stouffville could be listened to in Africa or wherever. As long as they tied the Stouffville and 102.9 together online, they would have it. So, folks, try to listen to us that way if you can. And by the way, if you miss it, we record and keep in the form of podcast at least half a dozen. We actually have probably about 100 or so now, I would say. Jay, did you say? We must have 100 shows.
I would think so, at least 100, yeah.
Now, which we could access, but we keep the most recent ones online. So sharingtheburden.ca or stbradio.ca will access different shows for you. So, folks, we're talking about fentanyl. We're talking about the loss of Sean. Sean died of an overdose of fentanyl. We're talking about how cannabis and beer and prescription drugs may be ways to lead into an addiction for, we'll call it, the predisposed or the genetically flawed. Number one, to put this all together, we must accept, as the medical associations of the world do today, that addiction is a bona fide disease to be treated like cancer and any other disease, not something to be pushed aside because it isn't pretty. If you see people die from either liver ailments resulting from alcohol or mental illnesses resulting from different drug use and so on, you'll see in a hurry that they're no prettier than any other way to go. And we all kind of go in the same way. We came with nothing, we leave with nothing, and what we do in the middle is what we'll leave, either as a legacy for good or a legacy for bad. So anyway, how do we ever get to this fentanyl, which, by the way, folks, for the last 50 years, I believe, has been used very successfully in the operating rooms of our hospitals, very successfully, very professionally. And the reason I know this so well is the last year, but this time I had to have an operation done on my nose. And when they're doing the interview before, going into surgery and all that, one of the questions was, any drug problems? And it's, no drug problem, any drugs that you don't want to be around, don't want to use. And I said, well, only fentanyl. They said, oh, why? And I told them the story. And they said, because that's what we use. Mm-hmm. We use it just about all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you're kidding.
No.
You mean this killed my boy and you want to use it on me? And my first reaction was, no thanks. But when it was properly explained to me that in that environment, it's part of the cocktail, in a sense, it's a wonderful painkiller. So, folks, when you go under, you don't only get knocked out and that gets rid of your pain. There are painkillers administered with the knocking out components that allow you to be pain-free and, to a great degree as you're waking up. And then, of course, the drill, you get on morphine or whatever until your body is able to handle it. And then, type 3s and whatever, down to Tylenols and nothing. So that's kind of the way it works. But fentanyl, very successful, but used outside, brought in as it is now, mostly from China, working its way through the States, I would say, where actually within the last couple of weeks, there was an amount uncovered in New York City that could actually kill 57 million people. Were it used, directly in whatever aspect, I don't know. But somebody thought, and then I kind of expounded upon it, I thought, what if something like that got in the food source? What if something like that got in the ventilation systems of big buildings in the cities or got into airplane systems and so on? I said, we could be wiping out zillions of people. This is not only an opiate epidemic applicable to those with the predispositioning of addiction. It is also something we've got to look seriously at getting absolutely out of society totally, so somebody with some evil inside of them doesn't concoct some way to do something like that. and probably even saying this is not a good thing, but it's already out there and on the internet and so on, and that scares me, you know. And Kathleen, I mean, you know the result, and in your offspring, you lost your son, your only son, our only son, to fentanyl. You know how bad it is, but you know that Sean, like everybody else, started with something, probably a beer, probably a joint, and I don't know. And he's not one that I asked, you know, if that's particularly what you started with and so on. But when I see the whole world coming together and I hear about angel investors all throughout the U.S. To make money on this cannabis, which, yes, is a wonder drug in a lot of ways and can help a lot of people, but nothing has ever had the hype that this stuff has in terms of making money from every aspect possible, and to all of a sudden become this wonder thing that cures literally zillions of you know, problems in this world, but something that also makes you high, and you're allowed to have, and it's okay to be high, and so on. Well, if you're predispositioned, folks, if you've got the genetic inclination toward addiction, it is the last thing in the world you want to be tucking, taking, and using, no matter what. Not for the medical purposes, but to as a, what do you call the
recreational?
A recreational type use. You know, it kills people. I see them, honest to God, every week in the jails. I always ask the question, well, you know, what did you first do? And it's almost always smoked marijuana.
Smoked marijuana.
And I thought, why do people not hear from these people or the people related to these people who lose people? All we hear about is the ones who push it. They've been users all their lives, and they, all the power to them. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, do what you want, but don't put it out there as a great thing for everybody to try, because if you have that genetic inclination, and folks, everybody who has an alcoholic parent, even a grandparent, a brother, sister, they have a 50-50 chance of having that same predispositioning. So we're talking, you know, millions and millions and millions of people who really were taken for granted that if they start on this path, they're likely going to end up dead on something like fentanyl. So I don't know, Kathleen, what's your take on all of that?
Okay, well, I think you're talking about two things there. You're talking about the legalization of cannabis for medical purposes or recreational purpose, and there's an age for that. There's a minimum legal age where you're allowed to use this. Our concern should be more with the illegal use of cannabis, the gateway drug, basically. And when I read some research, like from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and what they basically indicate, I don't have a whole copy of the article, and that's just one source, but they do view marijuana as a gateway drug for teenagers who are predisposed to moving on to other drugs. So what is easily available to a teenager is either alcohol or marijuana. That's what's available to them, like on the streets or, you know, from their parents' cabinets, what have you. So they start off with that. And if they're predisposed to being more experimental, or if they have the genetic component, then they start moving with their drugs. Then they'll go to harder drugs. They'll try and find oxycodone. They'll try and find heroin, and on and on and on it goes. So you're absolutely right to a certain extent that marijuana has been found for teenagers to be a gateway drug, but only if they're predisposed that way. There's a lot of teenagers who use marijuana and never progress further than that. So we have to be careful not to generalize, and you didn't, but I'm just making that point. And then we have the adults who are now using marijuana recreationally. My personal opinion on that is like yours. I'm not sure that that should have been legalized. We have enough problems with people on the roads with alcohol in their system, or causing chaos in their family or with their friends because of their alcohol use. Now we interject, we add something else on top of that. Now we're adding marijuana or cannabis for people, okay? Not everyone is like, oh, la, 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 I'm so happy on this. Not everyone is like that. They cause problems. They go and they have to buy this. It's very expensive. So they take from the family resources to buy their drugs. So I'm not sure that that should have been legalized. But a lot of people feel very differently. They say by legalizing it, we have removed to a certain extent the criminal component. And it makes sense because when you look in jail, especially in the United States, the majority of black people that are in the jail system is related to drugs. And by legalizing drugs, like in our country, we have taken that. We don't jail people for having drugs on them, you know?
Well, yeah, to some degree. Depends how much they have and yes. so on, whether it's yeah. determined that they're pushers or just users. But, yeah, no, you're right on that. And there's a, you know, the jury's out and will be forever on the subject. And my thing, too, is, the, you know, anything that's allowed, you know, by law is something a lot more people are going to try.
Yeah.
So for those who stick to the law, basically, and now everybody's going to try marijuana. You know what I mean? Like, if you used to drink, you're likely going to try marijuana. And, you know, I don't know the stats on how many people are predispositioned or any of that, but all I do know is that between Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, every day of the year, there are upwards of 5 million, you know, globally, but I mean, in the organizations who are not using, okay? So, and that turns into huge numbers, but, and of those 5 million who are not using, that probably represents between 5 and 10% of those who were looking for a solution to their addictions, to their problems of using and so on, which represents probably only 10% of the actual needy for attention. So, you know, you do those, do the math on that, and all of a sudden you've got a big chunk of the world already affected. And, you know, like you said, do we need any more gateways into mind-altering life? Because that's what it is. I mean, it's an escape.
Yeah.
I mean, I may use exercise for that. I may go to the gym all different crazy hours and stuff. That might be my... You know, but as humans, we lean to the fact that, you know, at some point, and this is where this step comes in, you know, we admitted that maybe there was something, maybe we could conceive of a power greater than ourselves. Some of us may call that God or Buddha or, you know, Mohammed, whatever. It's not the point. It's we realize that if there's not something out there, we're even in worse trouble because... You know, people told me I could never control them or anything else. I could only control myself. And then when I found, well, that wasn't true, I couldn't control myself. I couldn't promise you that tomorrow I'll get up and I'll do this, this. I don't know that. I'm a man. I'm not God. So, you know, and many times in our lives we plan on things and we have them, you know, set up and systematically arranged in such a way that they have to work and they don't work.
Yeah.
You know, we follow, you know, the scripture says, trust no man, you know, means women too, by the way, but, you know, it says, trust no man. And it's not because we're bad, you know, we're all perfectly made in some sort of way. It's just that we're not capable of being in control. And for most people, that's the last bastion is me. And you mean, I can't even control me. Man, I'm getting out of this feeling. How do I get out of this feeling? So I'll exercise, or I'll drink,
I'll
or
go
I'll
for a walk.
Have sexual things, or I'll, you know, whatever I'll do. And I said, well, that works pretty good, so I'll try it again, and again, and again, and again. And now if I'm predisposed or predispositioned to addiction, and I keep using a form of escape, that form of escape, at some point, I'll cross an imaginary line, and I can't stop doing that escape.
Yeah.
And I realize, geez, maybe that's what Dad's problem was with the booze.
Yeah.
Or Granny's problem with the prescription painkiller. You know what I mean? wow, yeah. I didn't know this could happen. Folks, that's what happens.
Well, yeah, you know? And what happens with cannabis is if you use a lot of it, you can become dependent on it, which is not quite the same as an addiction, but very close to an addiction. But there are also some research that indicates that cannabis is addictive for some people who use it like day in, day out, constantly, and can no longer manage their life without it. So that's a danger too. And you're right, like you're using like cannabis and you decide, okay, this is not working for me anymore. And I think that's the biggest danger, is now you're gonna move and try something else. And for adults, usually those are opioids. That's what you move on to. You go from the cannabis that's no longer working for you. I'm not generalizing. I'm saying for certain individuals. And now you're going to start with your opioid lifestyle. Yeah. And then I think that's what is going to lead you to the either the end of your life or the end of your family, the end of your life as you know it. And maybe that's what will lead into our next discussion about fentanyl and opioids.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing with fentanyl, for people who don't know, is quickly replacing heroin. And the reason for that is it's less expensive. Secondly, it's a better high. This is what they're telling me anyway. And, you know, for $20, they can get high on fentanyl. Now, the thing with fentanyl is it's such a wonderful, beautiful high that it's worth taking with the good chance of dying. Now, it's so epidemic in the with the people I'm seeing, all the meeting of 10 people and 9 of them have overdosed on fentanyl.
Yeah.
Overdosed, been brought back. They were dead. You know what I mean? And they're planning on doing it again, 8 out of the 9. That is, and they're asking me, a girl said point blank, she said, well, Scott, what do us people who, we're not only addicts, you know, we're all addicts in this room, but what about us people who just keep overdosing and where do we go? What do we do? So it's almost as though there's an epidemic of overdosers that a whole new window into addiction. And what is that all about? In other words, we can't stop taking this stuff, even though we know it's probably going to kill us. Because I watched my friend die and I watched another friend die. And, you know, and Lloyd, who's been on here several times, says, I lost 30 people, now 32, I think, since I quit the stuff a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it has gone.
But that's
way,
because of the
potency
of fentanyl. If you look, and usually it's mixed. That's the problem. That's what's leading to the drug overdose. It's very unusual for an individual to use fentanyl on its own. What happens, it's mixed in with another drug, and you don't know that it's mixed in. Yeah. And if you do know that it's mixed in, you don't know how much. Yeah. And for, like, if you look at heroin, which is often mixed in with, it takes 30 millimeters.
Milligrams.
30 milligrams, thank you, of heroin to overdose and die. While for fentanyl, it's 3 milligrams. Yeah. So just having a little bit too much of fentanyl in your heroin when you shoot up leads to your death. So and Narcan is not always effective on fentanyl.
No.
And I'll, if we're ready,
it's mostly
It can bring you back, but not completely. It needs more shots than normal. And that's because fentanyl attaches itself really strongly to something called the mu opioid center in your brain. So fentanyl has the capacity to go right through your fat barrier in your brain and attach itself right onto that opioid center, while heroin takes a little longer. So the fact that it's attached very strongly, when they give you Narcan, like if they give you Narcan, heroin will fall right off that center and bring you right back. It's not the same with fentanyl. It's going to take a lot of shots to bring you back. And sometimes the person with you only has one shot. It's your pal that got some Narcan from the pharmacy just in case there's an overdose in their group.
And well, that's right. So, as a matter of fact, there's only two doses in each kit.
Is that
I
right?
I have a bunch of kits, yeah. So, and I've heard many say, though, they had to Narcan me three times.
Yes.
Which means most people, even if they're thinking and have a kit, won't have a second kit.
They won't, yeah.
But there's other things you can do. I mean, you yell and you scream, you pound on their chest, you do whatever, you know, to...
You put them in the position of recovery, apparently, yeah.
So anyway, with that, we're going to have to take another break here, and I think Jay may give us a bit of a song, would you, Jay?
Yeah, I think it's time for a song, and I think think it's fitting that we play Sean's song. So here's Gary Wright and Dreamweaver here on Sharing the Burden, and we'll be back right after this.
Fly me away.